Hey fam, welcome to another episode of the Myths That Make Us podcast. This is going to be a trip report titled Chapel Perilous, How Meditation Helped Me Surf My Darkest Trip. So this is going to be a trip report over an experience that I had on an edible marijuana last Christmas that was the most harrowing, quote unquote, bad psychedelic experience I've ever had. In hindsight, it obviously wasn't bad. The reason I'm recording all my trip reports is my trip reports are kind of where my whole dance started. It's why I started my blog, and the blog is what led me to do the podcast, and the podcast is what's going to lead me to do all the other things that I'm probably going to do. And I also think it's a good insight into just like the deepest parts of my mind that I have gotten to so far. And I want to share that with you guys. I think it is probably one of the most direct ways that I can share the myths that have made me, if you will. Also, a third type of episode that I'm going to start doing is I'm going to record calls that I have with people who listen to the podcast who want me to interpret their dreams on the fly for everyone else. And the reason I'm doing this is because I am still a novice at understanding dreams. And I think that dreams are one of the most divine experiences that we have. And I think a big thing that I can try to help offer culture is a new perspective on how to look at dreams, how to interact with dreams, and how to understand dreams. I think it's almost like the God inside of you is giving you GPS recommendations every night if we only understood how to fucking listen and interpret the data that we're getting. So that's going to be a lifelong task of mine that I have willingly put upon my shoulders. Anyways, okay, we're going to get into this. I love you guys. I appreciate you guys checking these episodes out. And here we go. Alex Gray is a wizard. In a few square inches, instantly apprehensible, the picture that you see as the title of this podcast is doing a better job expressing this trip that I'm about to tell you than all the words that I am about to speak. But this is his gift. My gift, the net that I get to take into altered states, is language. This trip report is my best attempt to create something useful out of something terrifying. On the face of the picture that Alex Gray drew, the emotion that I see is awe. That is the face one makes when they encounter something terrifyingly transcendent. There is also a hint of realization, as if the overwhelming witnessing is also self-evidently true, that what is being seen is more true than anything else those eyes had seen before. This is what I felt. Some background. I'm a peculiar mix. I'm a cognitive psychologist with a strong logical mind, but I also have a borderline schizophrenic intuitive mind that is drawn to Carl Jung's psychology and to psychedelics. Since I can remember, I've been a radical atheist who looked to debate anyone about any claim that couldn't be validated by the scientific method. In hindsight, I think I was a scared little human desperately looking for someone to help me find a rational path to God. Once I started taking psychedelics at around age 19, this rigid scientific materialism view of the world started cracking. After 2 years of intermittent psilocybin use, introducing cracks into my belief system, and two DMT trips blew the motherfucker wide open. These two trips seemed like they unleashed this borderline schizophrenic intuitive mind I didn't know that I had. Since this part of my mind came online, weed has never been the same. where before I could smoke for hours with friends every day for months on end, after, even a single hit can send me into a very rewarding but never dull psychedelic experience. I think this will set the stage and help explain why a single and stupidly big bite from a 350 milligram THC medicinal cookie sent me into the most harrowing psychedelic experience I have ever had. Chapel Perilous, The Three Myths. It's a cliche now in trip reports to say that you experienced ego death. I hope to avoid this by trying my very best to articulate what happened to me. It's a Wednesday night. I'm visiting my family for the Christmas holidays. My mom has a medical marijuana license, and she got me a THC cookie. In my poor attempt at relaxation, I decided to eat a little bit of this cookie. I broke off about a fourth or a fifth and started chewing. It was fucking delicious. As I chewed the last bites, I went to sit in a living room recliner with my notepad. I'm in the midst of writing an ebook and wanted to catch an interesting idea or two if they had flipped by. After about 30 minutes, I thought, ah, this is nice. I feel it. Then time stopped making sense after this point. At some indeterminate point, I began to notice my heartbeat. It was very loud, and it seemed to be pumping very fast. I was beginning to sense that this was going to be more than I thought it was going to be. I put my notebook down, and I moved my right hand over my left wrist to try and get a sense of what my heart rate was. I couldn't quite get it because I began to notice that I could hear my heart pulsing in my neck, and I could feel it pounding in my chest. And it also felt like I could hear it in my ear. It felt everywhere. And none of the three pulses were in sync. So it was a cacophony of dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. I felt fear at the door of my consciousness, asking if it needed me to come in and start screaming. I felt calmly in control and let him know that it was fine and that he could leave. I got into a meditative posture, closed my eyes, and just started sitting with my breath and this experience. It felt like I was sitting in the center of a calm storm. My heart had been beating close to 200 times per minute. My fight or flight response was at a 10. My body was as alive as it possibly could be, but I felt calm and centered and present. But at some point, I slipped. I let the door open and fear stampeded in, and fueled by my ancestors' threat detection systems, began shrieking. This is when the story started. Psychological note. Our thoughts, emotions, and physiology are in a constant feedback loop. When your heartbeat is at its physiological limit, and your mind senses you aren't sprinting or lifting something heavy, your abstract mind is going to go looking for a reason why the heart is freaking out. This is what I think began to happen here. My mind started looking for the most terrifying stories that it could create that could justify my physiology and why my heart rate was 200 beats per minute. Myth number one, you're waking up from a coma, Eric. The first story that came to mind was that I was actually waking up out of a coma. This life, all these memories, all these plans, all the people that I knew and loved, they were comforting creations I had created to protect myself from the fact that I'm suspended in a coma somewhere in some hospital with a broken or permanently disfigured body. Writing these words that I am now speaking lack something significant, the feeling. Johns Hopkins University has done some amazing modern psilocybin studies. One of the common reports they collect from subjects is that the psilocybin experience feels, quote, more real than real life. This realization that I was finally remembering that I was in a coma felt more real than my real life. Most psychonauts have felt this feeling. I was feeling this feeling. I knew this to be true. I was in a coma. I was waking up. I was sad. I felt pain for the lost life that I was waking up from. I felt shame at being so weak and so afraid to face the truth of my existence, that I had created this life and this story to cope with the fact that I was in a hospital, in a coma. Once the pity had washed away and I accepted, I tried embracing the reality of this existence, and I was ready to wake up into whatever my real life was. As if the THC was waiting for me to think that thought, the story shifted up a notch in existential intensity. And I just want to make a note here that as I'm telling this part of the story, my experiencing self totally forgot that I ever ate an edible and that I was high. Myth number two, Eric, you aren't a person. You're a computer simulating humanity. No, I wasn't in a coma. There was no I. There was only this computer running this simulation. Humanity, its cultures, its myths, its religions, its stories and heroes were all bits of code running on this computer. And the computer was finally realizing this. The computer saw that its perspective had been contained by the avatar Eric. This sliver of the program was gone, however, and the computer was realizing itself, and then it broke. The computer was not capable of realizing itself. The simulation crashed, and the feeling of consciousness that thought itself the computer entered a broken loop. There was nothing other than the sensation of broken, self-referencing looping. This was what happens when this kind of computer breaks. This would be its state forever. So to give that part of the story some context, my experience truly felt like I, what feels like what I mean when I say the word I right now, was a computer, and that the world and the universe and humanity and history were all made up bits of code. And that the avatar that the computer was experiencing reality's program through was the thing that I would call Eric now. So that was my experience there. Okay, back to the story. It felt like I, the thing that feels like Eric, was an illusion, that humanity and everything inside of it was too. The feeling was what was so disturbing. This felt like capital T motherfucking truth, like it was more true than all the things I've ever experienced in my life. I truly felt like I was finally waking up out of the illusion of life, but that the truth was infinitely worse. My fundamental nature was that of a broken, looping consciousness. And I want to try to articulate what this felt like. It felt like my experiencing self, the part of me that is right now generating a coherent experience of reality where I'm talking into a microphone. I have this vague idea that people will listen to this later. I'm looking at a computer screen in front of me that has pictures and words. This all feels like a coherent simulation that my nervous system is generating. When I was in the midst of this experience, it felt like what I was generating this broken, self-looping, crashed program, and it truly felt like hell. It is the worst emotional experience I've ever experienced my entire life. It felt like I was going to be there forever, and that the totality of the universe was that this one computer was broken and that's all there was, and it's going to be like that forever. Okay, back to the story. I think this headspace has been mapped by others and called hell. Slowly, a new story started that was a little more optimistic. Myth number three, reincarnation. Okay, I guess I wasn't in a coma, nor was I a computer, Or I realized I wasn't ready to handle either of those truths. Quick side note, a part of my personal experience is that whenever I do a deep enough psychedelic experience and I come across this idea that I'm either in a coma or that I'm inside a computer simulation, if I'm being honest, my feeling is always, Eric isn't ready to accept this. Let him go back into the illusion. I don't know if that's true, but I know it's a core part of how I feel about reality and, you know, truth and love, right? Okay, back to the story. The next story that presented itself was something like reincarnation. Both the coma and the simulation story was more a sensation than anything. This story, this myth, appeared more as an image than a sensation. In my mind's eye, it looked as if my consciousness was in my lap, and it was looking up at the bottom of my head. And above my head wasn't my family's roof, but the night sky, and above the sky, I could see outer space. There was this massive, miles-long, circular tube passing through my skull that was arching up through the sky into space and then looping back down into the other side of my skull. Inside this tube looked like phantoms of my past and my future self. The sense I got from the image was that this was the karmic wheel. The weirder part was what was in the middle of this atmospheric halo. There were two globular bundles of something pushing up against each other. One of them felt feminine and organic and mushroom-like and alive. The other felt masculine and technologic, demonic almost, and void. It felt like the void. These two things felt like they were equals, that they required each other, and both were dancing and fighting with one another. They felt like they gave gravitational stability to the karmic ring that I was witnessing. This image still had the same feeling the other two myths had, that it felt more real than real life. But the story didn't completely flatten my hope and life. Psychology side note. I don't know if any of these three stories are objectively true. If I were a better man, if I were a betting man, I'd say that all three were attempts that my brain was offering to explain why the fuck the meat suit was at DEFCON 13 with my heart rate and the cortisol. However, in that moment, they felt more true than real life. I have newly founded compassion for people who have psychotic breaks. The key is this feeling that what you're experiencing is certainly true. Ego comes back online. At some point, post hoc research from my sister who walked in on me sitting on the love seat in my living room like a crazy person. It took about 2 hours. My ego came back online and then I realized, oh, I'm really high right now and I'm freaking the fuck out. Mentally though, physically, my mom and my sister said that I just looked like I was meditating for 2 hours in the living room. I realized that I was way higher than I had ever been before, and that for whatever reason, my brain was creating the most terrifying existential stories that it could dream up. I thought I must have looked like a fucking crazy person, and not wanting to scare my family, I thought going into the bathroom would be a good idea. I'd take a shower, I'd get in bed, and I'd ride the rest of this thing out with my blankie. As I stumbled into the bathroom, a whole new set of stories started to come up. What proceeded was one of the darkest hours of my life, where I truly believe some luck and a meditative mantra kept me from ending up in a hospital from a psychotic break. Psychology side note, our psyches evolved to operate in a group of 50 to 100, maybe even up to 150 people. It seems to be that our mind generates many stories for each of these people so we can roughly predict how they will act, so we know how to act when we interface with them. We all generate these stories unconsciously and effortlessly about the other people in our quote-unquote tribe. As a psychologist, I either am more attuned or more obsessed with the stories of other people in my tribe. At this point in my trip, it felt like my mind was compelled to live out some of the most traumatic stories I know are a part of people in my tribe as if they were my story. Accepting and loving the traumas. I'm a young and naive aspiring therapist. I read the books and do the research, but I have very little experience looking another human in the eyes and feeling their pain as they share the most traumatic experience of their lives. It seems that some part of my brain thought it time to undergo some training. My brain attempted to run the simulation of what it would be like if I were someone who was ashamed of their sexuality, had been molested, had molested someone, had been raped, had raped someone, had been physically abused, had been the physical abuser, had been in a coma, and had a psychotic breakdown. It's hard to describe what this was like. These stories weren't as consuming and as they didn't feel as certain that they were true as the previous three myths I mentioned earlier. It felt almost like I was living other people's lives and having to sit with the question, what do I do if insert traumatic event happened to me? Quick side note, all those things that I mentioned, I know someone in my quote unquote tribe of the 150 people that my brain is trying to keep up with who these things have happened to. And it was almost like my brain, without me giving it this command, was trying to make me process these events for other people in my tribe. Okay. I don't think I would have been able to sense this distinction if it hadn't been for meditating daily. I think if I didn't have the base of meditation, the chances I would have been taken to the hospital due to a psychotic break would have been unnervingly higher. And this is all happening while I'm in the bathroom, by the way. It was painful. It felt like I was deeply empathizing with what it would be like to have had been through each of these acts. I couldn't think or do anything other than utter, I love and I accept. And a quick side note again. It felt like my brain couldn't help but force myself to face the fact, what would I do with myself if I had done or had one of these things done to me? Almost like I was forcing myself to process the quote unquote worst experiences that I could imagine could happen to a person. And what is interesting is that, like, I know specific people where all these things have either happened to them or they were the person who did this thing. Okay. I don't know where this idea came from, the idea of I love, I accept, but it saved me. I started repeating it over and over in my mind. I've practiced transcendental meditation, so this felt familiar in some way. For the next 2 hours, while I am in the bathroom attempting to take a shower, these traumas took turns arising in my awareness. And rhythmically, I would look at them, I would love them, and I would accept them. Each time I said this phrase, the traumatic story that preceded it dissipated like smoke, and then one of the new traumas would arise, and I'd repeat the mantra, I love, I accept. Poof. Again and again and again, for hours, I seared ahead of the Hydra with love and acceptance. I would repeat, I love, I accept. The come down. Eventually, I felt quote-unquote back. After being in the bathroom for 2 hours and failing to even take a shower, I crawled into bed. What had happened the last 4 hours felt like a dream. It still kind of feels like a dream. Before I dozed off, I felt certain that I felt a mycelium-like spreading happening in my brain. It felt like I could feel my brain increasing in density due to new connections being made. It was weird, but also likely another story I was generating. I found myself whisper, "I love, I accept." Poof, gone. And then I fell asleep. Hindsight. I'm an existential neurotic. I've been grappling with unfalsifiable, terrifying ideas since college. After several dozen psilocybin and LSD experiences, this fucking edible sent me deeper into my imagined hell stories than anything else. I can't, and I never will be able to, know if these stories are true. But I do think this trip gave me a deep gift. This mantra of "I love, I accept" feels very powerful. This is the philosopher's stone that will transmute any "what if" base metal story into a golden gift. So what if it's true? I love the creativity and I accept what is as it is. As for the traumas, I think this was a gift too. These things happen. If I want to be able to help people, I have to be able to look these facts of existence in the eyes, accept that they are, and to love the humans regardless. I loved that this experience happened, and I accept that over the course of my life, I will have to revisit hell and experience worse traumas. I'll bring my mantra with me. Whatever the story, whatever the myth, I love it. I accept it. I appreciate you guys listening. I love you and I accept you, and I hope you have a great day. Namaste.